If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome back to How Are You, the Wellbeing Podcast. This week's guest was quite the lifesaver. She's a mummy herself, previously worked for the NHS, but now is founder of Sleepy Time Sleep. It's sleep consultant Rebecca Hill. Welcome to my podcast.
Hi, Connie. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming on.
Really excited to be here. Thank you.
You're so welcome.
Well, I say be here, sitting at home, obviously, as we all are at the moment.
I know. It would be so nice to just see people in person again.
I know. It's going to feel amazing when we can all get out, isn't it? Freedom.
I actually feel like I might be a bit socially awkward, like, because will I hug someone? Will people still be scared? Like, do we just bang elbows still? Like, it's all going to be a bit weird at first, but I guess we'll adapt quite quickly, I hope, anyway.
Yeah, oh God, definitely. Yeah, feeling the hugs, definitely needing the hugs again, for sure.
So I always begin by asking my guests, how are you? I know you've moved house, you've moved location as well, right? So how are you? How's Joshua, your son, adapting to the change?
Yeah, so we moved just before Christmas. So we completely relocated to Cornwall, which has been, yeah, I mean, obviously life-changing. Toddler tantrums were aplenty when we first moved. I think it's kind of, you know, quite a change, isn't it? Well, you'll know, because obviously you moved yourself fairly recently. But yeah, it was a big change for him. But actually, once we kind of got into a little bit more of a routine, and yeah, he's doing just fine. And yeah, we're loving beach life, even though we can't really go very far. That's like the nearest place we can go is the beach, but I feel very lucky that, you know, that's on our doorstep now. So yeah, all good, all very good. And you?
Yeah, no, we're good. I've gone from city life to sort of a bit more country bumpkin, which is actually really nice, and I feel like it's come at the right time. Like you, it just feels more outdoorsy, and I can enjoy long walks, and there's lots of trees, and it's a lot more muddy, don't get me wrong. Oh my God, all my trainers are ruined. I've had to get the wellies out, but it's definitely helped actually moving just for something exciting to happen, because it's just so boring at the moment.
Yeah, oh God, definitely with you on that for sure. But yeah, I think once you're in and you feel settled, it makes a huge difference. It's that first bit when you're in and you've just got so many things to do and you're still trying to work and you've got a toddler running around. Like, moving house with a toddler is, yeah, it's fun.
And I think it's really important for the listeners to know that you're a mum yourself with a toddler. Well, I guess every stage is challenging in its own way, but toddlers are challenging. So I'm going to like begin by talking about how we met. So we met through social media. Did you approach me or was it a friend? I can't remember, but whether it was you who approached me direct.
Yeah, it was a bit of both. I think one of my friends, I think, had seen your stories because you were really struggling and sort of said, look, I've seen like Connie's really struggling. Why don't you reach out? And I think I got in contact with you and said, look, if you want to chat, like, I'm here. And I think then we just set up a call, didn't we? And just kind of chatted through what was going on.
Yeah, that's it. I remember now. And I think Macy was approaching one. She still wasn't sleeping through the night. She relied on milk to soothe her to sleep, and that's actually started because she used to hate the car, and the only thing that soothed her in the car was milk. So then it just became a habit where milk became a comforter.
Yeah.
So we were having that problem where if she woke up in the night, she would ask for milk, and then she would be full up from the night feeds at the age of one, that she wasn't actually then eating her solids.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I didn't know what the hell to do. And you came at the perfect time.
Oh, yeah. No, it makes such a huge difference, like you said, because it's so hard when you're in that cycle and, you know, and they're not eating, because it breaks your heart, doesn't it? When they're, you know, when you're weaning and you're getting them onto solids and, you know, you make all this lovely nutritious food for them and they're just not interested. And yeah, it's soul destroying. So yeah, oh, I'm so glad it helped.
Yeah. I mean, trying your hardest, especially with making the food, and you're so tired because you're obviously your child's still not sleeping through the night, and you're trying to work, you're back to work by then, most mums are, and your partner's back to work. It is quite a lot, you know, and sleep is so detrimental for our health, and it makes me a better mum when I've had a good night's sleep, because I'm so impatient when I lack sleep.
Yeah, absolutely. God, it affects everything. I think, you know, we don't always give sleep the respect that it deserves. We talk a lot about good nutrition and exercise, but in actual fact, those two things are built on the foundations, like a solid foundation of sleep, because let's face it, if you're not sleeping well, you're going to make the wrong food choices because you just don't feel like eating nutritious food. You want to snack on kind of sugary or salty food. And, you know, you're not going to feel like exercising either because you just don't have the energy to do it. So yeah, so it will just affect everything, you know, your relationship with your partner, if you have a partner, you know, it you know, you kind of learn to sort of resent each other because you're just not getting the sleep that you need. And yeah, it makes parenting just so much harder when you're not getting the sleep that you need. But you're right, like the detrimental effects of no sleep or sleep deprivation is quite a serious matter, really. It's kind of joked about, but it is, you know, sleep deprivation can affect things like your mood, like your mental health, physically, things like other illnesses can manifest themselves, so like chronic illness and you know, in the long term, things like diabetes and obesity and things like that. So it's not a joke. We do joke about it a lot as parents, that, you know, it's like we should just be stoic about it and get on with it and just, you know, accept that that's what being a parent is all about. But actually, in the long run, it's quite a serious matter. Yeah.
And it doesn't need to be about that, which I've learned through you. And so many parents as well, they'll find themselves like competing with who's had the most sleep, or, you know, like we joke about husbands, I don't want to sleep like a baby, I want to sleep like my husband or partner, you know, all those jokes. You're so right. But actually, you know, what, once me and Ricky sat down and we got our plan from you and we followed it as a team, which I'm going to talk more about, it changed everything. I'm not even exaggerating. Like I was more productive with work, and therefore I was earning more money and getting more jobs. My content was better. I could exercise again. So I just became a lot more productive and happier. And for me, like, that's just worth it, like, alone. But what about sleep for the actual child itself? Like, how important is it for children to get the sleep that they need?
It's absolutely vital. So children need a huge dose of sleep in order for them to grow and develop. So it's like an essential building block for both their mental and physical well-being. I mean, you'll know yourself, like if a little one has had a good amount of sleep, they're going to be happier. They're not going to be as grumpy. You know, just generally, they're going to be more alert. They're going to be more into things. Their sort of cognitive performance is going to be better because, you know, they've had the sleep that they need and they're well rested. Negative effects on children, like in the longer term, there's like emerging evidence that there can be sort of detrimental effects on things like the cardiovascular system, so things like obesity, diabetes, heart, high blood pressure. So yeah, it is really important. I don't want to sit here and put the fear, you know, fear into parents, because of course,
no, of course.
There's, you know, but there is probably around about a quarter, maybe 25 to 50% of children that, you know, is sort of is estimated that they have sleep problems, you know. So that's an awful lot of children that are having sleep problems that, you know, could potentially be sleeping better. And that's why I feel so passionately about it, because, you know, I know, having been through it with my own son, that, you know, the positive outcomes that it can have. And I'm sure you've seen with Macy, like, you know, she's just, well, like we finished the sleep training and she suddenly had a massive growth spurt and she was coming out with loads of words. And yeah, it's just such a great great thing to see them thrive and doing so well.
Yeah, the biggest difference was her appetite. And then because of obviously eating better, she was growing, her hair was growing, it's got thicker. And yeah, God, no going back. Just taking it back to, you just said, like, you've been there. What was the driving force for setting up Sleepy Time Sleep?
So basically, I had a background. I've worked in the NHS and healthcare pretty much all my life. So in and out of the NHS in different guises. And so I actually worked in anaesthesia. So I was like helping put people to sleep for their surgery and things like that. So it's a very different kind of sleep. But slightly different because you've got the drugs to put them to sleep. But basically, I became pregnant. I had my little boy. I ended up actually quite poorly with my pregnancy. So I was off work for quite a long time. I then had my little boy and started to improve a little bit. But then his sleep was really, really terrible. Like he never slept well. And, you know, and I know, so when babies are first born, it's really normal for night wakings to be frequent. Like that's so totally normal. And I, you know, I would never want any parent to think that that wasn't the case. But yeah, it was just my biggest fear was like, how am I going to cope with no sleep before I have my child? Like I genuinely was fearful of it because I had always struggled a little bit with my mental health anyway. And so I was kind of like, okay, I know this might have a negative effect on my mood. And yeah, and basically that's exactly what happened. So I got to Joshua being probably about 4 or 5 months old, went through the 4 month sleep regression, which was pretty awful. But basically, I was on my knees. I was waking up probably every 30 to 45 minutes in the night, just sitting there sobbing my heart out. Like, I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, I really didn't know what to do. And basically just started searching through Instagram. And, you know, I found a sleep consultant and she basically taught me how to teach Joshua how to sleep well. And literally within, you know, a week or so, he was sleeping through the night and everything just started to fall into place. And so I then started to become feeling really passionate about that. And unfortunately, because of my own kind of health situation, I couldn't really return back to the NHS with the current situation as it was. And so I was like, right, I'm going to go and help lots of other mums with their little ones sleep, because I know how much this can like have a positive impact. And so, yeah, so it's basically kind of stemmed from there. And it's just gone from strength to strength, really. You know, I just feel so passionately about helping people to sleep well, because it just, yeah, it's great, isn't it? You feel so much better for it.
Yeah, it's definitely must be such a rewarding job. And I think I didn't actually know any of that, but now I do know that. And obviously having worked so closely with you and we stay in touch all the time, I can see that you're so passionate, and now I know why. I can see that you really care. And what I loved working, why I loved working with you, is that your approach is so understanding. Like, you didn't expect me to do anything that I wasn't comfortable with, and you're very gentle. People can hear your voice, so they'll know that you come across like such a kind person. And I think that's all really important. If anyone listening is interested in a sleep consultant, to work with someone that you feel puts you at ease, because obviously it's your child at the end of the day, and sometimes there are tears involved.
Yeah.
And that is one of the questions. I mean, I did ask my followers to send in questions, and I have interviewed people for my podcast who have 4 million followers, and you have had the most questions. So everyone wants to ask Rebecca everything. So I've got a That's big long great. List of questions.
Oh no, that's great. Yeah.
Like I said, there's tears involved sometimes. Why should parents not worry too much about baby crying, and when is the crying too much? Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, I do. So yeah, I think the first, you've absolutely touched on a really important point, is that every baby and every parent is going to be completely different. So it's all about finding somebody that you feel comfortable working with. That's really important. But, you know, somebody that you know, it ticks all the boxes for you. You know, like, I'll always try and be too non-judgmental, because at the end of the day, being a parent is not easy. It's like the hardest job in the world. You know, it's the best, but it's also one of the hardest jobs as well. But in terms of like tiers, I think, again, it's really about finding what's right for the person. So some people can't hear any, you know, and they really, really struggle with that. And there are sleep consultants out there that have very holistic approaches, but the results obviously take a lot longer. So, you know, you'd be working with them for a lot longer, you know, in order to try and do that with minimal amount of tears involved. There are other extreme methods of, you know, like cry it out further and kind of leaving the room and leaving your baby alone to cry, sort of controlled crying. And I generally kind of would say that's not my approach. I would always kind of pitch myself somewhere in the middle. And the reason I do that is because I feel like parents, when they come to me, they are totally exhausted and they want results pretty quick. They need to sleep pretty quick for their sanity, for their child's sake as well, not just their own. So I generally explain that, you know, there is some crying involved, but I never, ever ask parents to leave their child. They're always in the room with them, you know, supporting them, especially through those first few nights, which I'm sure you will remember. You know, they are tough the first couple of nights. But in all honesty, there's no evidence that short bursts of stress, short bursts of crying are detrimental to your child. There's no evidence to suggest that there's behavioural changes or anything like that. So I think, you know, it's okay for children to cry a little bit. And in fact, there is some evidence to suggest that short periods of stress actually can improve resilience in a child later on in life. So while I do totally understand, like, I know hearing children crying is just awful, I totally understand that. I think it's okay to accept that there may be little, you know, short bursts of crying involved with sleep training, and that it won't have a negative effect on your baby or your relationship with your baby. I think that's one of the things I feared was like, oh, I'm going to go into my child the next morning, they're not going to love me anymore, or, you know, that horrible feeling that you dread. But yeah, of course, it's all fine and they are happy when you go in and see them.
Yeah. And I think if you follow the routine advised, you know that your child's been fed, winded, they've had their bath, they've had everything that they need. And I remember you saying to me, like, those tears are because she's learning a new skill and there's a little bit of frustration there. But obviously when you follow the plan, those tears get less and less. And I think now, gosh, Macy has a toddler, she whinges and moans and cries over nothing. So whatever, like, you can cry for 10 minutes and you're going to be absolutely fine. And it was never like, sometimes it was quite bad to the point where we had to go back a few steps. I don't know if you remember that, where like she started to try and make herself sick.
I do.
Which I'm sure you've heard parents probably mention before, because I know Macy wasn't the only one, but she would make herself try and make herself sick so that we would go in, basically. So she did get herself into a bit of a state a couple of times. And so we would just go back a few steps in the program, and then, you know, and it always worked and it was great. So it's definitely not easy, but it's worth it. And I think within a week, I saw such a huge difference.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think in terms of the overall tears in the longer run, because often when parents come to me, they are up in the night because the babies won't go back to sleep and they're struggling. And so once they're sleeping through and once they're well rested, the tears, in fact, actually just kind of fall away. And they generally are crying a whole lot less, apart from the toddler tantrums, of course, which we just can't, you know, it's a part of their learning. It's just, it's natural what's going to happen.
Absolutely. So out of interest, what is the main reason that parents and children or families have like sleep issues? Like, why are so many parents struggling or can't get their kids to sleep through the night? What is it?
I think generally it comes down to the fact that it really is kind of around the structure of baby sleep. And so when babies are first born, they have two phases to their sleep cycle, which is deep sleep and this rapid eye movement sleep. And babies need a lot more rapid eye movement sleep because they have an awful lot of information. Obviously their brains are just being completely overloaded with information, new stuff that we you know, they've never even seen in their life. So that's kind of the thought process that we think is why babies need kind of this more rapid eye movement sleep. And when they hit this 4-month sleep regression that people talk about a lot, around 3-4 months, their sleep matures into the same as an adult structure. So it's like 4 phases. So they introduce 2 light phases of sleep. And so generally what happens is that you just get in this pattern whereby babies and children, they become dependent on a prop. So like we call it a sleep prop. And so what that would be potentially, like in Macy's case, it was the milk, it was the bottle of milk that she just was totally convinced when she reached the end of her sleep cycle, she was just totally convinced that she needed that same thing in order to fall back off to sleep. So we naturally do wake several times throughout the night, like that's a normal pattern of sleep for any child or adult. But for an adult, that might just mean, you know, rolling over and repositioning yourself and just not even being aware of it. Pre-children, that is, of course. But children and babies, they go through these sleep cycles. They reach the end of a sleep cycle and I need that same thing in order to fall off to sleep. And they'll be totally, totally convinced. And so my role is to sort of help unpick those, what those sleep props are, what those sleep dependent props are, and sort of how to help those babies to sort of self-settle without them. So there's loads of different ones. It could be rocking. It could be some people have to go out in the pushchair or the car, breastfeeding, dummies. Yeah, there's so many different things that, you know, it could be as simple as, you know, having to stroke their hand or, you know, something like that. But and they just get into these patterns. And so often the more we're trying to help them or the more the parents are trying to help them to sleep, the more these sort of sleep associations start to sort of fall into place. But it's so easily done. And I think it's, you know, it's, I never ever judge a parent for what they've done before, because let's face it, like it's such a new world, isn't it? Becoming a new parent, we don't know what we're doing and we're just kind of learning as we're going along. So we just do what's best at the right at the time.
Yeah. And my auntie said to me, just remember that short-term solutions become long-term problems.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, that's what happened, you know? It was a short-term solution.
Yeah.
But it became a long-term problem.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good point. She speaks some wisdom.
Talking of comforters, could co-sleeping be a sleep prop in itself?
Yeah, it definitely can, because the parent themselves, like the child being convinced that they need to be beside the parent, that can be a sleep prop in itself. And again, like co-sleeping is one of those things, like if it's done safely and you're following all the lullaby trust guidance and it's working for you, then that's totally fine. Like don't feel like there should not be any pressure for somebody not to co-sleep if they're doing it safely and they're happy with that. If you're not and you're struggling and you're being kicked in the head and, you know, you're not really getting much sleep because you've got a little bed thief in there, you know, then that's then when, you know, it's worth considering chatting with a sleep consultant about sort of helping them to sleep in their own sleep space.
Yeah, I remember a few times Macy's been in our bed, whether it's a nightmare or co-sleeping was something I never really wanted to do. It's just, I just never felt safe. Me and Ricky, I'd fall asleep when she was a newborn with her on my chest, which I'm sure many mums have done, just from the exhaustion. Yeah. And I would wake up in like a panic that she had slipped down or fallen off the bed. And it just wasn't right for me. And Ricky would wake up with a pillow in his hand going, the baby, like he'd be dreaming, thinking that he'd squashed Macy and it was a pillow. Yeah. It was just so stressful. Yeah. So it was definitely never an option for us. And last week, Macy had a terrible nightmare, screaming. And I've told you, our neighbours complained. We've got a neighbour who lives on their own and they've complained. They said Macy screams all day and all night, which isn't true. She sleeps through the night. So I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, that was more added stress that when she did wake up when she was ill or teething, or in the morning when she wakes up at 7:30,
yeah,
you know, mom, like I have to run to her, which I would prefer not to. I'd prefer her to learn to be patient, etc. But because of this bloody neighbor, anyway, this night, last week, she was screaming so badly. It was definitely a nightmare. She was panicking. I could feel her heart racing. I took her out of her cot and we had to calm her down in our room. And Macy knows that she's not allowed to sleep in our bed. And she is a nightmare. She's in our bed in between us and we're just calming her down. She's tossing and turning. She's sitting up. She's rolling over. She's getting frustrated. And I'm like, right, shall I put you in your bed now? And she goes, like that. Like, yeah, she likes her bed. And it's all part of the sleep training process because she would have probably happily slept with us before. She likes her own space. And I'm just so grateful for it. I think it's made her independent. Yeah. As well, like as a sleeper, but she's an independent person too. Like she's confident that she can be away from me, but know that she knows that I'm also still there in the next room. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, completely, completely. And that's definitely, you know, my aim when I finish with clients is that, you know, they know that, you know, once the baby or child, toddler is sleeping through, that generally if they do wake in the night, there's a good reason for it. Like there is probably something going on, whether it be teething or they're not feeling well. And so, yeah, they, you know, they know that then that you will come, like you're never, ever not going to attend to them. It's just, you know, you may not respond always immediately, but you will always come to them.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Vernon Kay.
And I'm Holly Mackay.
And we're here to tell you about our brand new podcast, Parenting Past the Pandemic, brought to you by Aviva.
Yes, we're going to be delving into a whole heap of parenting topics from the generational gap to online safety.
And some of the big topics which have come up through the pandemic, such as helping to manage our kids' anxieties and how we can affect the world they'll grow into.
Parenting Past the Pandemic. Find it wherever you found this podcast.
So I think this is like the $1 million question. Mums and Papas shared an old post of mine about sleep and all sorts of things the other day. And one lady posted on it saying, my child's 3 months old and she's still not sleeping through the night. What do I do? Because it was like, it's like the 3 a.m. mum club. And I instantly thought to myself, are 3-month-olds meant to sleep through the night? Like, when is your child supposed to be sleeping through the night?
Yeah, so at 3 months old, it's definitely still very, very normal for night wakings to continue. And, you know, that's a very, very normal part and process, and that they will probably still need night feeds at that age. Nearly all will need night feeds. Babies that can self-settle, generally the ones that I work with will pretty much be able to sleep through from around 6-7 months. generally that's once weaning is really well established and that's going well, that they will naturally just drop away those night feeds by themselves. That's not to say that that kind of fits all, you know, criteria, because of course they're all different and it would depend on things like their health and their weight and like if there's a medical reason why they might need additional night feeds. So, but yeah, on the whole, in general, when they can fully independently self-settle, the majority that I work with around 6-7 months will start sleeping through. But in some cases, you know, where the parents are trying to teach them to self-settle and it maybe takes a little bit longer, then it may be up to a year. But I would say if they're not sleeping through by a year, then, you know, if they feel like they're struggling, definitely worth asking for some help.
Can you work with parents from day one, or when would you advise parents if they, because when I have baby number two, I'm just going to be like, right, Rebecca, the baby's born. What do I do? I never thought I'd be that person. I thought it would just come so natural to me. But I'd rather a professional just say, this is the routine you should follow and it's going to give you the best sleep and you're going to cope so much better and you're going to have a better relationship. I would pay thousands for that, yeah. You know, yeah. Like for me, it was priceless. When's a good age to start?
I mean, yeah, firstly, I really completely agree with you. And I always use the analogy with people of like, if you needed help with fitness, you would go to a personal trainer. If you needed help with nutrition, you'd go to a nutritionist. And so there is absolutely no shame in asking for help with your little one's sleep. I think that's the first thing to say is that, you know, there are specialist people out there that can help you. Just do your research, make sure that they've got a good solid background and, you know, and they're registered with kind of, you know, good organizations and they're obviously keeping themselves up to date. But yeah, in terms of how quickly you can implement good sleep habits. So I do work from newborn age. However, it's very different. Like you can't sleep train a newborn. That's the first thing to say. You just can't sleep train them because the first 6 to 8 weeks of life, they don't even know night from day. Like they don't have an internal body clock yet. So generally it takes that first six to eight weeks for them to figure out night from day. So I always kind of recommend to parents that they try and have the baby, you know, split up the day, 12 hours of day and 12 hours of night, so that then they are having, you know, they're near the window, they've got plenty of daylight exposure so that they know it's daytime. And then at nighttime, you'd keep everything very low key. Have a nightlight on low while you're feeding. Don't be tempted to have the TV on or look at your phone and things like that. Just keep everything very low key. Maybe listen to a podcast, for example, instead, rather than kind of the blue light looking at your phone, which isn't going to help you either if you want to get back to sleep. But in terms of what you can teach them, there are very, very small steps that you can make. So you can start with things like a bedtime routine, and that can be as early as you like or as early as you feel ready to do it. I know for me, trying to incorporate a bath in those first few days was just like, no chance. I haven't got the time to do this yet. But once you feel ready to, that's the first thing you can do. And then there are very small steps that you can do in terms of like getting baby into good habits. So it's not necessarily sleep coaching or sleep training. It's just getting into a good pattern of like feed, play, sleep, so that then they're not starting to become reliant on the feed in order for them to fall asleep. So yeah, definitely there's like little steps you can do. And I do work with families. So I do like a 0 to 12 week package where I basically kind of guide them through what is normal for now, like what's normal, what can you expect, and like little baby steps that you can make in order to sort of help them along the way so that you don't end up in the situation like I did and sort of end up with them dependent on those sleep props. But yeah, I'll be here for you if you need any help. I'll be here.
Thank you. That's music to my ears. Obviously, I said it's priceless, but in reality, not everyone can afford a sleep consultant. So, what tips do you have for parents that might not be able to afford a service like that? Because it does sound like a real luxury. Mm-hmm. Are there any sort of basic tips, or is there anywhere they can go where they can get advice on getting their baby to self-soothe and sleep through the night and all those things?
Yeah. So I generally try and post things regularly on my Instagram page. So I do pretty much post daily on there, and there'll be kind of tips on there. So you can kind of, you know, try and pull out the posts that are relevant to your baby's age. That's the first thing. The other thing is that, you know, there are kind of sleep guides out there that you can download. So I've got digital download guides that people can just kind of purchase. So they're like, you know, a more budget option, and they can just download like a newborn sleep guide or a nap guide, so that then you've got all the guidance around, like, how much sleep should my baby be having, and like, how long should my baby be sleeping, and what are their awake windows, which of course that's like an age appropriate amount of time your baby should be awake for before they become overtired or undertired if you put them down too soon. So yeah, there are kind of little sleep guides out there. There's also plenty of kind of online courses as well that are kind of a more budget range, and I'm literally just about to launch my own, well, certainly for newborn anyway, but it's something in the pipeline for sleepy time, is that I'll be introducing some online stuff, because you're right that, you know, obviously, you know, the one-to-one support may not be for everybody, so yeah, it's about kind of having a whole range of different options for people, but yeah, there's loads of information out there. I think the thing is, it can be very overwhelming for parents, especially when you are sleep deprived, looking at loads of different advice. And I think, you know, a very good resource, which is really underused, is the NHS. So if you literally just want to know things like your baby's awake windows, you can just type into the NHS and look at how much sleep your baby should be getting. It's a really basic resource that's there for everybody. So you could just start to look at that. And then in terms of like self-settling, that's probably going to be more a case of, you know, looking at sleep tips, how to teach your baby to self-settle. So keep an eye out for posts on self-settling. And just practice. It's going to take practice. It's not an easy thing to do, especially by yourself. Mm.
Yeah, that's another thing. How important is it that couples work together, or that the child has consistency with it? Yeah.
Consistency is everything with sleep training, and that's the thing, because if you do something one night and then you do it slightly differently the next night, it gets quite confusing for the baby. So the more consistent you can be, then yeah, the better the outcome is, much more likely to be a better outcome.
So obviously me and Ricky worked on it together when we started Macy's sleep program. He actually did the first couple of nights. I think it was because she actually kicks up much less of a fuss for Ricky than me. He can put her to bed still probably 10 minutes quicker than I can. It's like a year down the line and we still have that same issue. So I'm like, you could do bedtime because it takes you 5 minutes, reads a story, puts her in a cot, and that's it. No fuss. With me, it's a lot. It's a little bit more like mucking around and stuff. But yeah, why is it important that both parents are in this together, if that is your family makeup? Obviously there might be single mums listening or single dads and so forth, but say if you're a couple,
you know, if it's a couple, then or even a single parent, you know, that may have some support from a family member, like a parent, you know, their parents, grandparents, it definitely helps if you keep mixing things up so that, you know, they don't get too used to one person doing it. But it's absolutely fair to say that I think generally, in general, babies and toddlers will always want their mum, and you know, it's a natural thing that they will push us, for sure. They will definitely push those boundaries a little bit more, especially with toddlers, where it does become about pushing boundaries. But yeah, you know, it's very normal for that to happen. I mean, yeah, Joshua is exactly the same with me. You know, it does make life quite difficult sometimes as a parent. But in terms of tackling things together, yes, definitely important to sort of work as a team and to sort of try and take turns in terms of like the bedtime routine can be really helpful. It's really, in some cases, though, it might just be dependent on whether one parent is working and the other isn't. But yeah, I think where you can, having that sort of support and working as a team definitely can make a difference.
Yeah, it definitely helped with us. We were on the same page. He knew exactly what her routine was. So then he wouldn't question me either. You know, sometimes he's like, oh, are you sure that's the right thing to do or whatever? And I'd just be like, Rebecca said, that's what we need to do. And then he wouldn't argue.
Oh, bless him. No, he did amazing. And I think that's the thing. It's great when dads do get involved, you know, or partners full stop. I think it's great when they get involved because, like you say, you're both then doing the same thing. And you know, parenting is one of those things that, like, we're always going to do things slightly differently to our partners, and it can create friction at times. Whereas I think if you've got something to follow with sleep, you know, this is our plan and this is what we're sticking to. Yeah, it definitely helps when you both kind of know what you need to do.
Yeah, I definitely prefer a plan. So I'm going to ask you some questions from my followers now, just to finish off the podcast. I've literally, like, I'm showing Rebecca my phone. Can you see I've just screenshotted, like, lots and lots of questions on here? That's There's so great. Many. So I'm just like, I've just been like going through them and picking some that are popping out to me, that some of them are obviously very similar. And the first one seems to be that a lot of people find that their child will sleep through the night a lot of the time, but some nights they're up for 2 hours crying, or an hour, 2 hours crying unsettled. Why is that, and what can they do?
Well, without more information, it is tricky to say, but it's going to depend on a lot of things. So firstly, the child's age, and like, I always would say to people, firstly, go and have a look at, like, what is the day sleep like? Like, how much sleep are they getting in the day? Is it too little? Is it too much? You know, it's very rare that you can get too much sleep during the day, but basically it's going to depend on, like, the day sleep and, like, what that kind of looks like, and the child's age. And often it might just be that they need to kind of have a look at the nap routine and, like, restructure things a little bit, because it might be that that's impacting on bedtime and the night wake ups as well. So that's the first thing I would look at. And obviously that's all going to be age appropriate. So, like, if they're younger, they're going to need more day sleep and more frequent day sleep. And obviously as they start to get a bit older, the awake time sort of stretches, but they still do need around about sort of 2.5-3 hours sleep until they start dropping the nap altogether, which is around 2.5-3 years old. So it's kind of a gradual process. But night wake ups, there's so many different reasons. Like, it could be that there's some sleep prop dependency there. It could be related to overtiredness if they're not getting enough sleep in the day. It could be a bit of a regression, like if it's a short-term thing, you know yourself, like you know with the regressions sometimes they can throw you a little bit. And you know, sometimes if they're going through a developmental phase, sleep can be a little bit disrupted, but normally that would be kind of short-term, like a week or two, and then if it hasn't gone back to not waking up for long periods in the night, then normally that there's something that maybe needs tweaking with their sleep routine.
Okay, so is it true then that sleep breeds sleep? So if your child is at an age where day naps are still essential, if they're not getting those naps in the day and enough time, it can affect their quality of sleep at night?
100%, yes. Because, like, a normal sleep pattern would be that you start to produce sleepy hormone, which is melatonin, and you'd start to produce that at the end part of the day, and that starts to rise throughout the first part. Then it's at its highest for the first part of the night. And your awake hormone is cortisol, which is the one that wakes you up and that drives you to kind of get up and out of bed in the morning. And what you tend to find with babies that don't get enough sleep in the day is that they just become overtired. And so they need more cortisol to keep them awake, to keep them going. And so they have this excess of this awake hormone floating around in their body, and so it's much harder for them to resettle themselves back off to sleep in the night. And classically, you know, early wake ups is one that I hear a lot of, but nearly always that can be related to overtiredness as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, I had a lot of questions about their child waking up at 5:30. How can parents push it to that 7:30 mark?
Yeah. So I think it's very normal. Again, it depends on the age of the child, but generally it's very normal for babies and toddlers to wake somewhere between 6 and 7 a.m. Like, that's a pretty normal wake-up time. You may find as they get a bit older, that may be more like 7:30. But yeah, that's a pretty normal time. But if it's pre-6 a.m., it's really hard. Like, you know, dragging yourself out of bed at 5 a.m. every morning is really tough. I do have an early wake-ups guide on my website, but basically that's kind of like a troubleshoot shooting, but I would look at things like making sure their room's completely dark. Obviously, this time of the year is less of a problem, but in the summer, like, a blackout blind is an essential, in my opinion, like blocking out the light, because even a small amount of light can trigger them to wake up, even through their eyelids if they're closed. If they're a younger baby, I'd maybe look at like the last feed, making sure that that's a nice full feed so that they've got a nice full tummy and they're not waking up through hunger. And then there's other things like making sure the room environment, like the temperature, running some white noise to make sure that they're not being disturbed by anything that's happening in the morning, like the boiler kicking in, or maybe somebody's getting up to go to work or shift or something like that. So yeah, there's kind of a few things that you can do in terms of, you know, troubleshooting, but I generally would also look at what time they're going to bed and what the day sleep looks like as well, so that they can kind of figure out if their child is maybe a little bit overtired.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's good. It's good that you have that all on your website as well, that people can head over there, and because every child's individual, you know, so it's really hard for you to say. There's not one answer, is there?
Exactly. You can just then troubleshoot. Yeah.
Exactly that. So the last question I'm going to ask, because I thought this was really interesting considering your own journey as a first-time mum and the fact that, you know, the lack of sleep was just beyond, if the same for me, it was just so hard. So this lady said, "I'm so anxious about having children. One of the reasons is because I love my sleep. What would you say is your top tip to ease this anxiety?"
Yeah, I can relate to that on so many levels. I think definitely for me, before having children, like it was one of the things that held me back. Like, I consider myself quite an old mum. Like, I'm now nearly 40, and you know, I probably put it off for a long time because I was so worried about this. And yeah, I think the reality is that, yes, you know, you can't sugarcoat the fact that being a new parent, it is hard. However, it's also the very best job in the world, and it is so worth it. The best thing I would suggest is kind of getting some sort of a support network in place, so a support bubble at the moment, you know, making sure if you have got some help there, take it. Like, don't feel like you've got to be strong and just push through it on your own. If there's help there, take it. Try and take a nap. I hate that saying, take a nap when baby naps, because that's what everybody said to me. And of course, there's all jobs always to do and things to get done. But, you know, if there is somebody that can help you with the jobs so that you can take a rest, have somebody make you some meals, you know, maybe batch cook some meals before you have your baby so that, you know, you can have a load of food already, you can just grab it and, you know, heat some food up rather than worrying about cooking. And then, yeah, once baby's born, just really focus on the key things I would focus on would be knowing that your baby can't stay awake for very long. So, you know, don't just wait for your baby to tell you they need to sleep. Just know that they can really only tolerate about 45 minutes to an hour awake before they're going to need to go down for a nap. So I think you sort of have to, in some cases, have to take a little bit of control of how long they can tolerate awake. And then think about, so avoiding overtiredness is critical in newborns, because they, you know, they will get overtired really easily. Following that pattern, like I was explaining earlier, so like feed, play, sleep, basically, so that, you know, they're getting into a bit of a routine. You're not sleep training them, but you're kind of getting them to actively eat rather than sort of fall to sleep. And then that way, then when they do go down for sleep, they're going to be ready for it as well. But yeah, I think the other thing to say is that those first few months of life, do not put too much pressure on yourself, because, you know, babies want to be close to you, and that's very, very normal. Like, this fourth trimester, they've just come out of the womb, they want to be near to you. I think probably one of my top tips would be to get a baby carrier. I don't know if you ever used one yourself. Yeah, baby carriers all the way.
Oh my God, I was terrible with mine.
I think they're just great because, you know, it frees your hands up to make a cup of tea or make yourself a sandwich, and you can just let them be close to you and sleep. And don't be fearful of doing that. I think is very, very, certainly those first few months of life, it's really normal for them to want to be on you and asleep on you. And you've got to enjoy those newborn snuggles while they are still there, because they grow really quick.
Do you know what? I'm so glad that you said that, because I had a baby carrier, but I think I got a really complicated one. So definitely definitely get one that's just easy to pop on. And it put me off using it. Next time round, I'm so going to use one, 100%. It was definitely, that was one of my things. I'm going to get a baby carrot. I actually said it to my mum the other day. It's so funny that you say it because I felt so trapped with Macy. Like I felt like I couldn't leave her. Obviously, I was an anxious first time mum, but I also wanted to do things and it made me feel trapped. And that feeling of being trapped, obviously, we all know and feel like that right now. It's just not a nice feeling. So a baby carrier is a definite and a great tip. And I think getting rid of that stigma of put the baby down, you're spoiling it. I had my dad's mum, I love you, Gran, she won't listen to this, but my cousins might. I love her. She come and stayed with us after I had Macy for a few days, and she kept saying, put the baby down, you know, you don't need to hold her all the time. And my mum said it a few times as well. And I think it's quite an old-fashioned thing. And I always felt guilty for cuddling Macy. Next time round, I will definitely, for the first few weeks, be holding that baby close to me, for sure.
Yeah, totally agree. And I, you know, all of these kind of, oh, you're going to spoil them, or, you know, they'll get too used to you. No, it's just rubbish, absolute rubbish. So yeah, no, go for it. And I think the other thing is as well with baby carriers is if you're feeling up to it, then you can maybe go out for a walk and get some fresh air, which of course is really helpful, but also exposing baby to daylight, even if they are sleeping, you know, and fresh air is going to be a good thing in terms of helping them to regulate their own body clock and start to recognize night from day. So yeah, it's a definitely a worthwhile investment to make, I would say. And you can hire them, like even if people can't afford to buy them, you can go and hire them from places rather than sort of, you know, buying out a new one. Well, it used to be, actually, now I say it, with COVID, it may not be possible at the moment. Yeah, I'm not sure at the moment, but yeah, they're sort of sling places that you can hire slings and baby carriers. So yeah, that's an idea. For the future, hopefully.
Yeah, near future, I hope. But also, you probably can get really nice ones secondhand where, like me, I didn't get on with it, or, you know, they might only use it for 4 weeks and then you can wash it and they might, yeah, there's probably some really nice ones available on eBay and all those other websites or in some nice little charity shops. There's like Farrah Kids near my mum's house. It just does baby stuff and they've got some lovely bits in there. Thank you so much, Rebecca. They are all my questions. I do end each episode where I ask my guest what piece of advice would they give their younger self. Now that can be teenage Rebecca or that can be new mum Rebecca. Whatever advice you would give your past self, what piece of advice would that be?
Oh, I love this question. That's great, actually. I would just say to always trust my instincts because they're nearly always going to be right. It's just go with your gut always.
I love that. There's so much confidence in that as well.
Well, I'm trying. It's something I'm working on, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's definitely easier said than done, but to have that in your mind and to focus on that and just to work on it every day, it definitely you start to realise your potential when you start going with your gut and your instinct, which is good. You have a bit more self-belief. So thank you so much for being an amazing, informative guest. I hope you this is going to help so many parents.
I hope so. I really do hope so. But yeah, thank you for inviting me. It's been my pleasure.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.